Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Chat of the Wild is a part of the Greenlit Podcast Network. To find out more information, as well as other great shows, go to greenlitpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Chat of the Wild. In this season, it's a Zelda season. So we're playing a new Zelda game, and that Zelda game is The Legend of Zelda Phantom Hourglass for the Nintendo DS system family of products.
Consumer-grade entertainment.
The dual screen slash developer system slash...
Developer system. The third pillar? The third pillar.
Yeah, our third pillar of Nintendo products.
The elusive third... Do we have two pillars anymore? There's just one pillar now, right?
Yes.
It's
pretty stable. Turns out one pillar, pretty stable.
It's a stable pillar.
So, it's a new Zelda season. That means we got to talk a little bit about it beforehand just to see. But I think I already know the answer to a lot of this stuff. BC, have you ever played this game?
I have never played this game. I was aware that this game existed, but all of... I think it was after Four Swords that I just kind of gave up on following all the random offshoots. So I never played Minish Cap before we played it for the show. Didn't play Spear Tracks. Didn't play Phantom Hourglass.
I'm sorry. I got it. Offshoots. Offshoots. This is a mainline Zelda game.
I mean,
so was Minish Cap.
Is it?
Yes.
I mean, I would argue that this one is more so than the ones that Capcom was allowed to make. But, I always thought they were mainline.
I don't know. That's not a judgment of the game. That's just me saying, like, it wasn't on the flagship system. So, to me, it was kind of an offshoot.
Do I need to bring up the sales numbers of the Nintendo DS?
No, we all know.
Especially by 2007, that thing was just moving along.
Do I need to show you the commercial of Beyonce playing the Nintendo DS?
There's a commercial of Beyonce playing DS?
Yes, she's playing Brain Age, I believe.
Is it Brain? Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Anyway, Brian, have you ever played this game?
Yes, I have. I have played this game. Yeah, when did this come? This is like summer 2007. So yeah, I think I have weird feelings about this game. I think I liked it at the time, and I enjoyed the controls, but yeah, it was just disappointing as someone who loved Wind Waker so very, very much and thought it was one of the best Zelda games that ever happened. So I was like sort of hot and cold on this game.
Fair. I've played this game. I bought it when it came out. I don't recall if I beat this game or not.
Mm.
But that may have something to do with how unremarkable like the story is and everything. If I remember correctly, it just doesn't stand out that much in terms of story. But I remember watching, it may have been like some Nintendo press conference where they were showing this off about how you can play a Zelda game with one hand on a stylus and that's all you needed to do it all. Mm-hmm. And I believe it was Michael Damiani from Easy Allies came out on stage. He was not part of the game trailers at that time, but he eventually went on to there and did a lot of stuff with them. But I believe he came out on stage as their show, because he worked in like the forums, the official Nintendo forums, and was like a player in that.
2063, man, different time, different place.
Yeah, and I was skeptical the whole time. It wasn't one of those things I was excited about.
Ooh.
Especially with the DS, which is a lot saying with the DS, because I adore the original DS. It's still one of my favorites. 3DS is still like my top tier Nintendo system. Like, the Switch is getting up there. There aren't enough Zelda games on Switch yet for it to dethrone
that's
that.
That's true.
There's still so many more Zelda games on 3DS, including the DS. The fact that you can play all those DS games.
And Triforce.
And yeah. and I just, yeah, I was not blown away by this game, and we'll get into it as soon as we start playing the game about that more.
Because I would have seen that E3 press conference too, and I walked away just completely hyped on it. It looked like a lot of fun to control with the stylus. I was ready to play an entire Zelda game like that. And the writing on the maps, I thought, was going to be the coolest thing, because I had always wanted to do that. I'd always wanted to take notes on previous Zelda games. Mm-hmm. And so the ability to just take whatever notes I wanted, I thought, would be a huge boon for the game. And we'll see on some of that. But yeah, I was ready. I was absolutely ready to play this game.
So, let's go ahead and jump into it. We start this game up, and we are retold the story of Wind Waker, basically, with a few flourishes here and there of talking about certain characters, about their beauty and how brave they are and all of the stuff that wasn't necessarily, like, you know, spelled out for us when we actually did that adventure ourselves.
It felt like the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead of Wind Waker. because you have Nico telling what he assumes was the story.
Yeah, he gets some things wrong.
Yeah. But then you realize it was Nico. So he was in like the ship hold watching, like swinging for ropes the entire time we were saving the world. So he doesn't really get
it. This is very true. I didn't think about it like that. I was just happy to see Nico. I realized throughout the course of this that, like, you know, hi, pirates. I'm not going to get to see you for very long. I think I pretty much only just care about Nico and Tetra. Never mind.
Right. They're the ones with actual character.
Yeah. I was like, there's so many friends here. Why can't we play with all of them? I've got Nico. I guess I only like Nico. Okay, never mind. Nico and Tetra.
It was just because he has this, like I said in the Wind Waker, it's because he's got a great voice clip. Right? Like, that's what makes him stand out so much more.
I mean, we hang out with him the most. He's a total dope. He doesn't understand at all how, like, the ship works or life works. He's just the guy at the bottom, and he's like, hopefully they'll send me someone to stand on for a little while.
Right. So, we get told this story, and then we go up on deck. And we see Tetra is there, and we're basically rushed through what they're doing right now. I'll give you three guesses. It's looking for treasure. Okay. Like, they're pirates. That's what they do. They're looking for treasure all the time.
Go ahead, BC.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that, like, I was so pumped when I saw, like, Tetra front and center for, like, this game, because I love Tetra as a character. She's a great character. Yeah. So excited to be back in the Wind Waker verse. So,
yeah, real hype.
Most of them are talking about how, you know, they're looking for a ghost ship, and Tetra, making me like her even more, is the skeptic of the group, who's just sort of like, there's no such thing as ghost ships. But it's like, we've been on ghost ships, actually. Yeah, they're totally real. You've talked to ghosts. Like, why wouldn't there be, like, ghost ship is not that far-fetched in this world necessarily. Like, she kind of stands out in that way, where she's the one that's just like, no, it can't be a ghost ship. And I'm like, why can't it? Why could it not be a ghost ship that we're after?
I mean, are we hunting down a ghost ship? Are we hunting down treasure? Like, I thought we were on this you know, 5-year Enterprise mission. Like, we're out here looking for new islands, a new Hyrule to establish. Like, we're going onward to create our own future. Like, is it within our jurisdiction to hunt down a ghost ship? I guess
we're
maybe.
We're just doing this on the side. It just in OBC, that doesn't make it a spinoff. We're just taking a side trip while we go do our thing.
We'll edit that out. but yeah, I was just like, I don't know if this is like our job right now, guys. I guess, you know, Picard would probably just dive right into a ghost ship, but much like Link does, but we don't have the like ghost ship grabbing item yet, so we don't do so great.
No, so as they're talking about this, the ghost ship shows up. It's this creepy looking thing that just comes right to the side of us, and Tetra is just like, I ain't afraid of no ghost ship, and then jumps onto there, and then we just hear her scream.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Link runs after them, jumps onto the ship, tries to jump on the ship, loses his grip and falls.
Mm-hmm.
This is the intro to this, because then we see Tetra in a weird sphere in some kind of celestial space thing or something like that, just being like, save me, Link. And that's the start to our adventure.
Yeah, the sunken place shot, basically.
Yeah,
kind of. Yeah.
I was really upset because we hear this giant high-pitched scream, and I was like, please cut to Nico. Please cut to Nico. Please just like play it off as like one of the pirates made that noise or something. But no, that was Zelda actually getting kidnapped or something. Lightning strikes. And yeah.
I want to say, just before we actually start playing the game, what I saw in here, booting this game up, starting it, seeing all this, hearing this music, it reminded me of like a movie you watched when you were a kid that you have rewatched on DVD, but then one day you found the VHS and you played the VHS and you're just like, how were we okay with watching things on this format? Where this game is visually and in terms of audio grainy. Like everything about it is grainy and it's very strange.
The grainy aesthetic is in right now, let me tell you, but still like there's something about it visually, like, Link's head is round in a way that is unsettling. I don't know how to explain it, but it just like visually some of the shots, like when it's like looking at him from the side, make me uncomfortable.
They tried their best, and I applaud them for being able to transfer this style into such a small game, and they do end up creating a large adventure out of it. You know, this isn't just like some small thing that you get like two dungeons out of here or something like that. Like, you know, they had to make some shortcuts here and there, but we are getting a full Zelda adventure out of this. Now, in terms of story and all of that, it's like, they did go a bit too gimmicky on this, though. It's not like they're going to go less gimmicky on the next couple games. This is really where I think making gimmicks in Zelda started, and we do get like a good wave of for like 6 years after this where the main Zelda games were very gimmicky. When we get to Spirit Tracks, and then when we get to Skyward Sword, very heavy on gimmicks to try to like sell the systems they're on.
So were the systems were heavy on gimmicks as well.
Yes.
Or at least packed full of any gimmick you might ever want to use.
Yeah.
We're going to see some gimmicks in this game. I assure you.
Season of gimmicks.
So, like I said, we fell off of that ship. And we landed
it.
On...
That's it. Yeah. Our friends are gone. They don't know where we are.
We're not going to see any of those pirates for a while.
I know. Yeah. I was making jokes about, like, they're all talking to each other. And I was like, come on, men. We've got to say as much as we can before we disappear from this narrative.
Link washes up on an island, West Merkay Island. And we're greeted by a fairy. Fairies were not a thing like they are here in Wind Waker. The fairies that we were used to before looked like little angel people or weird aliens. And this looks like the fairies from Ocarina.
Yeah. Weird aliens.
I mean, yeah, I'm not... I love the design, but they didn't look like people. So this fairy
wakes us up in a very calm, collected manner.
Before we actually stop at everything, BC, what did you name your character?
Oh, yeah.
I named my character Paul Wall.
All right. Brian, what did you name your character?
I mean, it's I farted, right? Like, we did not see that coming. It didn't work out as great in Twilight, in Twilight Princess, but going back to the Wind Waker universe seems to just work wonders for I Farted and his band of jovial, adventurers. Because I've been getting all sorts of good ones, so.
So mine, I went the otaku route where I was like, all right, what do they call Link in Japan? And got sent down this rabbit hole where they actually sort of like base it on the American English pronunciation, where in Japan he is Rinku. And so I had to look up like, okay, what is the katakana for that and put that in there? And it's just not, it turned out like not to be as cool as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have like an upside down tattoo now?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. All right. It's just like, it just somehow that happens.
It just, it weird. I just woke up one day.
You go to the right websites and all of a sudden you're at a tattoo parlor.
Yeah. Let me tell you about Gundams. No. Anyways, fast forward back to where we were. I'm going to, hang on. Do we know the name of the fairy? I need to know this.
I mean, I've been calling her Cella because it has that like Italian C-I vowel. I don't know. I don't know. It's C-I-E-L-A.
So I was saying Cela.
Mm-hmm.
But I immediately tried looking it up where I'm like, is this a play on words? Like, you know,
I have no idea.
We had Navi, which is for like navigation. Majora's
tattle
Mask was tattle and tail and
coral.
This is, I'm not sure. We might be missing something. Let us know on Twitter if we're missing the name of this. She wakes us up telling us, hey, listen. You laid it up on this island, and maybe I can help you, but we really got to go talk to Grandpa.
Maybe I can help you. No, like, I'm going to help you. I'm going to invite myself on your adventure at every single turn where you could go off alone. I will jump in.
Now, here's the thing. Do we play as Link in this game, or do we play as Cela or whatever?
Cella.
Good question.
Because the only way we interface with this game is by touching the screen, and when you do that, the fairy appears there, and Link follows the fairy. Mm-hmm. And you could say, like, Link chooses of his own accord to follow the fairy, but I don't know. Maybe we don't actually control Link in this, if you really think about it. I'm not going to spend much more time thinking about it, so that's okay.
I mean, just another example that... the Wind Waker timeline should truly be the puppet timeline. So, yeah.
Okay. So, we go and follow her up to a hut. She says, he's in this hut here. And then, interesting thing about this game is, you know, we haven't had this up to this point. We have two screens now. And this game does effectively use these two screens. Like, we always have a map up on the top there, mm-hmm. showing, like, where we're going and all of that. And... we do get introduced to the idea of being able to hit a button, or you can press like down on the D-pad and down or up on the D-pad. I can't remember which one, but that brings the menu down for you to draw on, and you can circle little things and make stars and write down codes or whatever you want on there. Mm-hmm. And that is going to be a big gimmick of this game. In my opinion, the best gimmick of this game. There is a worse gimmick of this game, which I don't think we'll get
to
in this episode.
It's also the map. The best and worst thing about this game is the map.
What don't you like about the map?
The type of puzzles it lends itself to. When they're like, we got to use these maps for puzzles. And the fact that it necessitates handing you a map at every single turn. Because that you need the map to do map puzzles. So there is the versatility of the blank canvas, the map canvas, really, that you can make any note that you want on it, and it makes things so much better. But then there's also the fact that they have to use it as a mechanic, puzzle mechanic.
I don't know. As soon as I figured out you could draw on the map, I wanted this in every single game I play.
Yeah.
Any game that has a mini map, I want to be able to annotate it. Like, if exploration is part of the game, let me annotate the map. That's it.
Fortunately, with Breath of the Wild, they gave you pins. I'm playing the game Genshin Impact right now. They let you put pins on the map, and it's like, I just love that in general.
I need more than 100 pins in Breath of the Wild.
Well, sure.
I ran out of pins a long time ago.
Anyway, we go and talk to Grandpa, a.k.a. Oshus. Like, Ocean, maybe, I guess?
Okay. I was calling him Oshus.
Oshus.
I'm like, oh, shoes.
Oh, my God, shoes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, shoes. And he basically says, yeah, I can help you get off this island in a way by, like, giving you information. There's this guy that might be able to help you. His name's Linebeck. Go find him. He's over at the port. Go BC.
Yeah, but not before telling us that no one ever returns from the ghost ship and you shouldn't follow it unless you
want to die. Not before just telling us that we're living our life wrong and that we need to just not do anything because everything is dangerous. Everything we ask him is no, that's hard. That's dangerous. I gave him a pass.
Okay, Grandpa.
Like, you don't know who I am, and that's okay. So I'm not going to explain why I'm fine to go on adventures. But he's a real downer about everything.
Now, if we go and take the path it seems like the shortest way to get to the port, the bridge has been destroyed. There's an earthquake that happens just as we walk towards it. And then when we get there, the bridge is in pieces. There's a woman hanging by and she's like, this happens every week. Just like, maybe we'd build a different bridge, but what are you going to do?
Use some bigger Legos.
If we
had left when, you know, if we hadn't gone and talked to the old man, we could have made it across the bridge and we wouldn't have had to gone into that dangerous area that we're going to have to go into now.
Well, if you go into one area, there are a bunch of chews there, and the fairy goes and says, oh, it's too dangerous. We can't be here. And really, it's like, I could roll past all these things. It's fine. I could pick up stuff and chuck stuff at them if I wanted to. It's fine.
I just walked past them. Exactly.
I think the implication here is that it's dangerous to go alone. So.
Well, I'm not alone. I have a fairy. So.
Oh, true, true.
We all do it differently.
But if you go up ahead a certain point, you will have those little thin trees that we had in Wind Waker that you need a sword to slash to get through. So regardless of if you're brave enough to go past these chews, you literally get blocked by trees at some point.
So we have to go find the old man's sword locker.
I had a little trouble figuring this out just because I didn't go to the right area. Like, I just kept overlooking it, and I went back a couple places and then eventually saw, like, oh, there's a cave with some barrels in front of it that he just tried to block people from going into.
Yeah, that happened to me, too.
You go in there, you get Oshu's sword. It's literally just his sword. It's not like, oh, the island sword or, you know, just a sword. It's just like, no, you took this. It's got his name on it, but it's ours now because that's the law.
Just kind of rub the Sharpie off of it.
Right. Hang on, let me get a rock and just rock and scrape this off.
Get a new
piece
of masking tape for this.
Oh, actually, no. My name, when I put it in, it was Oshu. I'm Oshu, so this is my sword. we walk out, Oshu's just like, all right, I give up. You're just going to take your sword, take my sword and leave anyway? Whatever.
You shouldn't just do go. That. That's bad.
It's so weird where the fairy is talking to this guy, his grandpa, and about, like, in her view, she looks very fondly at him, where it's just like, oh, he raised me, and all this stuff. And Oshu's just like this grumpy old guy that is just like, why would you ever do anything but stand with the staff in your house?
See, okay, I have this headcan, because we're going to get to the next part of town, and we're going to go look for Linebeck, or Linebeck, or however you want to say it. However you want to say it.
Hasselbeck.
See, he's like an ocean freighter, so I figure he's got like a commoner's name. His name's probably like John Linebeck.
No, he is the puckish rogue. You know, Linebeck is not his real name. It's the name that he gave himself to make himself sound even grander. He's Wind Waker's Han Solo.
Han Solo doesn't fake ankle injuries. Anyway, so. We get to town, and we have to go look for him in the milk bar. And there's even adults in there that are like,
"We're going to skip ahead. I'm going to take a break before we get to that."
Okay. But there's even adults in there that are like, "Hey, you shouldn't do that. That's dangerous. You're just a kid. You need to, you know, don't do that or whatever." And I'm building this headcanon that this is a Fujibayashi game, and I'm getting the idea that, like, all the adults in the room are like, you need to make the Zelda game like this. Oh, no, the DS is this terrifying new monster of a system we've made. You can't make it too hard for them, or you got to do things this way, or you got to do stuff this way, or don't forget to make it a little easier. What I wonder if he just made a game where, like, all the adults are, like, telling you no the entire time.
God, now that you say that, yeah, I am picturing that there was just going to be this bigger game where he wanted to make his own sort of thing, where he's just like, yeah, I want to make my own Wind Waker on all this stuff. But then, like, they were just saying, like, no, you have to make it touchscreen. You got to put touchscreen. He's like, well, I'll do this little thing with the touchscreen. And they were like, no, everything must be touchscreen. And it just turned into that, where, like, they had these other plans for doing all this stuff. They want to do something interesting, but it wasn't enough. And they were coming down on him, just be like, more touchscreen.
As someone who didn't know going in that this was a touchscreen only game, I was just mashing buttons trying to figure out, okay, how do I move that isn't this? Surely there's a menu where I can turn this off. Surely I'm not going to have to hold the stylus for the entirety of this game.
Nope.
Well, no, you can get your little thumb pad out. That came with the original DS.
It moves the map up and down, but that's it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I forgot to mention, before we got the sword, we had to put in the special code. The code being how many palm trees are on the beach, and then you write the number on the sign to do that, which is like, it could be like, it'll be used in some interesting ways where it isn't just like a single code that you have to put in, but it is like a symbol that you need to draw yourself, which is like, I'm kind of into. But at the same time, it's just weird and kind of clunky the way they prompt you to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Chatface, one of our listeners, was like, this guy's got a magic sign that makes a password that will unlock anything if you draw a picture on it. And he picks a 7. Okay. All right. Maybe something a little more elaborate.
So, we have our sword. We can actually go on our adventure now. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we'll talk about more of Phantom Hourglass.
Hi, we're Ellen,
Steven,
and Mark,
hosts of Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk gaming and game development.
Topics include programming, design, tools, and more.
We also do interviews and one-hour game jams.
Listen to Nice Games Club wherever you get to your podcast. You get there. Or at nicegames.club.
Hi, I'm Ray, and this is my friend Alex.
Hi.
And we do a show called No More Whoppers.
Between us, we're as old as 4 RPG protagonists.
And now Alex will give us a funny anagram for the name of the show.
Big old knockers.
Join us every month or so on the Greenlit Podcast Network.
Okay, so we have our sword. Let's go cut things with it. We go back around where the shoes are. How do you guys feel about attacking? Like, I don't mind tapping on the enemies to jump at them, but swiping is weird. Also, I've got a screen cover on my bottom thing, and so the outside has a little divot that sometimes the tip of my stylus gets stuck in. And so it's like, it's kind of like annoying to do stuff, and I'm tempted to just actually remove that thing.
Yeah,
I mean, I've had like that system forever. Problem. Yeah.
I think it's amazing. I think it's amazing. I really wish I could do it right now because I have to play on a mouse setup right now because my best laid plans went awry. So it's nice I can hold a controller though and have access to the shoulder button. But yeah, I've got a mouse and it works okay. But I love playing this, the act of controlling this game with the stylus. I think it's great.
I'm not a fan of having to slash. Tapping with the stylus, tap attacking, like Jeremy said, great. Once I figured it out how to roll, I can roll like 50% of the time when I want to.
Mm-hmm.
Gives me like a 30%.
I'm down in like 10 with mine. Making the mouse do that is really tough.
Yeah, so we go ahead, we go into a cave, we gotta solve some puzzles where we read some stones, and they say, the first clue is that it's second from the right, and the third clue is that it's fourth from the left, and then the last clue is this, and they don't give you everything, and it should have been straightforward, but for whatever reason I read it wrong the first time, and I felt so dumb, because I was like, this is the first puzzle, and I read it wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm so disappointed with myself.
Yeah, I didn't have words to describe these puzzles 15 years ago when I played this game and was like, there's just something about them that I hate. And they're Alundra puzzles. They are. They're like, you know, this guy hit this switch this many times or that switch, you know, on the right and whatever, and write them all. Now you can take notes, so you should write this down. Whereas I just want to take notes for whatever I feel like taking notes on.
The red boat is traveling 40 knots northeast, and the blue boat is traveling 50 knots.
Let's balance the equation. All right, what do we have over here?
Yeah, so we get through all of that. We get some chests, get some keys, and we make our way out to the other side. When we get there, there's another woman that's just like, oh, hey, kid. Did you see that the bridge is fixed?
Yeah. Thanks.
It's just like, cool. That just took him that long to fix it.
If we'd gone a half hour earlier or an hour later, we would have saved all of that. Oh, no, you're going to die.
Mm-hmm. We go to the port. The guy at the port says, like, oh, you're looking for Lineback? Yeah, he was at the bar. Milk bar, sorry. Rated E for everyone.
Yeah. He also said that ship is hot.
Did he? Did he say he was?
Oh, he is into that ship.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you meant hot, like it was stolen.
Ooh, no. It's like just could a be fine vessel. Could
be. We haven't ruled that out yet.
Yeah. You seem to think he's this master suave rogue, but I don't know. I think that's his boat. His dad gave it to him.
That is the character they are trying to establish him as. I'm not over here. I'm not a Lineback stan, okay?
Okay.
I do have a little figure of him, but that's because it came in a gacha pack where I didn't get to choose what it was anyway. I do remember liking him in a way at the end, but not like because I like who he is.
In the game,
like he's not the worst.
I find him likable, but in spite of himself.
Mm-hmm. We go to the milk bar. He says, Lineback isn't here. He said that he was going after some treasure that's over in our temple that we have on this island.
Don't go there. It's dangerous.
You're a child. You're not allowed to go there.
You shouldn't even be in the bar. Get out.
Right. All of that stuff.
They kick us out of the bar practically.
We run up to the temple. Now, this is where it is nice. Along the way, we come across some things that we can't interact with yet, but it's very easy to jot it down on our map to say, like, hey, there's something here. It's also very easy to erase things, too. So there's some games that I play where, like, you can put pins down, but then there's also, like, after you get the treasure, remember to go back in your menu and delete that pin so you don't forget a dozen hours later, he'll come back and be like, oh, wait, I have put a note here. I don't remember why. And it's like, because I already got it. So it's pretty easy to just like be like, I'm done. I did that one. So I like that.
This area that we're going to is easily the best area in the entire game. And this is this is also the spot that every single reviewer and like show and you know, magazine, if there were any left at the time, were like, I hate this part of the game. You have to keep coming back here. Shut up, Scrubs. It's the best part of the entire game.
Yeah, but we don't necessarily see that just yet.
Not yet.
We get into there, and there's a bunch of dead bodies. Now, these look exactly like what we would deal with Stalfos, where they would just like get up and fight us. But instead, it's more like Dark Souls bodies, where they just are these spirits that are like, yeah, let me tell you how I died. I wish I had notebook paper.
I should have had a number two pencil.
We get into there, and this is where we see Linebeck. He's hanging out in the middle of this room.
Not dead.
Not dead.
Which is important.
Yeah, because we did think, when we first got in there, we did think one of the bodies were Linebeck, one of the skeletons. But it's not. So we get in there, he's fine, but he says like, hey kid, I hurt myself, I need you to do this for me. Go hit this switch.
Do this thing.
We hit the switch, and we hit the switch, and then he gives us a key.
There's a lot of yelling involved back and forth.
Yeah, I loved this comic moment where he's shaking you a bunch, being like, thanks for helping me out and all this stuff, and talking about I'm here for all this treasure. And he's like, here, I give you the key. And then we get the animation of Link putting his hand up in the air, holding the key, but he's all dizzy, and even the music is a little off, and it's like, okay, that's funny. That's really funny. It's a good play on.
That's really great. And it's because I'm glad it was there to remind me, because the entire discussion, I was just like, over it. Because him and Chella are just constantly squabbling, and I don't care. Like, because she's like, you know, you're not really hurt. Oh, I am really hurt. Oh, but you're not really hurt. But I am. It. Oh, look how much it hurts. And like, they're gonna keep talking about how much of a coward he is the entire game. And I'm just like, Chella, it's cool. That's his character. It's fine.
I was gonna wait until we actually saw him, but Linebeck is absolutely Jack Sparrow. Like,
okay,
the inspiration in his face and who he is and the way
I hate him more now
is Jack Sparrow from the Pirates of the Caribbean movie. He looks like a John, like if there was a person playing him in the movie, it would be a Johnny Depp. Like that's the look they were going for. That's clearly the inspiration they had in this. And that's also the character that he played in those movies, you know, faking that he couldn't do a thing, having someone else do it for him. Then when it's done, running away like nothing happened with all, you know, whatever he can grab. That is the character. I never thought of a Han Solo.
He's successful,
but like,
though, right? Jack Sparrow, he's successful at doing that.
If he was as successful as he wanted to be, he wouldn't have to be doing more things. Right, like if he actually got the.
But sometimes
the
it works
treasure,
for him. I think Lindbeck's. I'm gonna run back to the boat and pretend to polish it for a while because my leg hurts. I guess that works for him because he's hanging out with Link. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. He gives us a key. We go through, hit another switch, opens a door. We find a big treasure chest. In that treasure chest is a map of a quarter of the world that we're in, because we're not actually
chart.
It's a sea chart. We're not in the same quadrant or like continental area, however you want to call that.
Yeah,
as
we
were
went out to do, we went out to do our USS Enterprise thing,
right? And we inadvertently found a bunch of people on islands and magical
look,
things.
New civilization, join our kingdom.
Yeah, it's very. it's very much like Explorers, where they just stumble across things, right? They had plans to do all this stuff, and then they inadvertently find some other people that already lived on this island for years, and we're going to go and steal all the stuff and smash everything they have.
Well, yeah, like, Tetra gets real insecure at the beginning of the game. She's just like, look, stop calling me princess. Like, I'm still a hard ass. Like, it's cool. And so, yeah, I think she just kind of, like, wants to prove. She forgets what we were doing here.
Right. So, we have the map. Linebeck is disappointed that it's just a map. We go back to his boat, because he just ran off without us, and we're going to go find him again. And then he's just like, yeah, let me see that map real quick. I think there's something up with this. And you got to just, like, you got to scratch your map, but you don't know like, what you're doing. Like, it just says, like, rub the map. And eventually there's a small little corner where some stuff happens.
And there's, like, an animation of Link rubbing it, like a scratch-off.
Is there? I wasn't paying attention to that, I guess.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can see, like, Link's hand moving back and forth.
Well, and it's not just Linebeck that like, Oshu shows up. And at this point, I was like, oh, no, this is going to be awful, because they're just going to both start yelling at each other and talking about how this is bad or something. But yeah, Oshu's is the one that's like, it's a scratch and sniff map. You should check that out.
We scratch it. We find a little spot, has a symbol on it, a symbol that we are familiar with. It is a symbol that we've seen in previous games, right? Like that sort of flame symbol. We've seen that in one of the sages.
It's reminiscent of the pearls from Wind Waker as well.
Yeah, I can't actually remember off the top of my head if it's the exact same shape, but that's basically what it looks like.
But it names Ember Isle, which is, I mean, judging by the rules and standards of Oceanhorn, someone's already told us about Ember Isle. And I was like, I was going to head there anyway.
We can't use rules from that game in this. What are you talking
about? I
was going to
head there anyway. It's the only place I know about. And so clearly I can go there because someone told me the name of the island. So I didn't need a scratch and sniff map to tell me to go there.
Well, in this world, you do need a map because you do have to figure out like where you got to plan where you're going ahead of time.
Okay.
But we're not going to do that in this episode.
No.
We're wrapping it up here.
We don't get to become a boat.
No, we don't. In our next episode, we're going to beat the first dungeon. Get on your boat, travel around, go to that island, fight a monster, fight a big monster, get an item, and then meet back here. And we're going to talk about it on Chat of the Wild.
Boat edition.
Jeremy here. Just before we get into the show, wanted to give an update. We have a new tier on our Patreon. That is the Sheikah supporter tier. For $5 or more a month, you get a week early access to episodes, as well as getting to pick games that you play alongside us. Each month, people in this tier can pick a game that we'll play. We'll stream it on our Discord for everyone else to see. And it's been a lot of fun. We just played the Rogue Hero Ruins of Tassos game, which is this roguelike, Zelda-like game that is very similar to the old Four Swords games. It's very chaotic. It's very, very fun. If you want to join up in that, go to patreon.com/chatofthewild. If you can't afford that, we do still have the smaller tier. Just a reminder, people that join in that tier, they get ad-free episodes. They also get access to our side quests episodes, where once a month we record an episode just talking about all the other games that we have been playing. You also get to pick the games that we play in between Zelda games, what we call our Gaiden games, as well as getting a shout-out. And if that sounds good to you, once again, go to patreon.com/chatofthewild. Sign up, support us. We really appreciate it. Anyways, that's all I have. So let's get on with the show.